goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher. Oh,
there's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
And a one-handed in and did, and he throws it in toward the corner of the far side. Ekholm goes after it. Bufflin gave it away to Johansson. In front of shot, they score! A power play goal for Nashville. They score two quick ones. And it's 2-1, Predators.
From there, as the Winnipeg Jets fall to the Nashville Predators last night by a 5-1 margin, giving up five unanswered goals to lose to your Central Division rivals, they finish their road trip, zero wins, five losses, six total goals scored. It's about as bad of a road trip as you could have imagined for the Winnipeg Jets. It's amazing. It was only 11 days ago they were flying high after beating the Chicago Blackhawks at home. And in that span of 11 days, it's safe to say that things are not going well for the hometown team, the Winnipeg Jets. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those listening live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We are in studio, willing to accept your tweets, so give it to us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Give us your thoughts on the road trip. Are you pressing the panic button? Have you pressed it multiple times already? We want to hear from you on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Our Facebook page is facebook.com. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, as bad of a road trip as they could have imagined, it was not that long ago, about 10 days ago, we sat in this room and said, you know, after they had lost to the Philadelphia Flyers in that, what was the best game they played on the road trip, and the game where they really, you could argue they should have won, that if they could rebound last Saturday against the Boston Bruins, if they could rebound against them, things could still be okay. But the last four games since last Saturday, the loss to the Bruins, the loss to the Hurricanes, the loss to the Wild, and the loss to the Predators, this Winnipeg Jets team comes home to Winnipeg battered, bruised, devoid of confidence, and more importantly, devoid of any points on this road trip.
Yeah, Drew, and it's been obviously a horrendous road trip for the Winnipeg Jets, and it was highlighted by last night's horrific 5-1 loss at the hands of the Nashville Predators. And right now, this is a team that is demoralized, and you could hear it in post-game interviews with Blake Wheeler, and you could hear it when they talked to Chris Thorburn after the game. I mean, this is a group, I think, that is very frustrated. I mean, this team, Drew, has only scored six goals in the last five games on the road. Five games on the road, and they only scored six goals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at, you know, some of the top players for this team right now, and it really hasn't been just on them. But, you know, Paul Maurice benching the top line of Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, and Blake Wheeler, to me, was probably bigger news than the fact that they lost the fifth game of the road trip. I can't understand why Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler were benched, Drew. Mm-hmm. I can understand why Mark Scheifele was benched. He took a slashing penalty earlier in the third, which led to a goal by Colin Wilson. But certainly, I mean, this team is not scoring enough goals.
Yeah.
They're giving up too many goals. They're taking too many penalties.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, it's not all doom and gloom, Drew. I mean, I think that Philadelphia game was very winnable. I thought Steve Mason was the difference in that game. We talked about it on NHL This Week. I thought the Carolina game was a good effort from the Jets. That game could have gone either way. So, I mean, if the Jets come back from this road trip and they win 2 of 5, they're still 500, and we're not talking about these kind of panic button situations. But, I mean, right now, they have to stop the bleeding. That's all it's about. I mean, this team is bleeding right now. They have to stop it, and it starts tomorrow afternoon against Nashville. I expect them to win that game because I don't think they have any other option.
Dave, your thoughts on the game last night, the five-game road trip, and we'll get momentarily to Paul Maurice's comments where he discusses benching, as you said, as he benching Blake Wheeler, benching Patrick Laine, and benching Mark Scheifele for pretty much the entirety of the third period. Those guys only played a grand total of 34 seconds in the third period.
you know, the number one thing I think this team was lacking was discipline. I mean, and it was highlighted by that Mark Scheifele slash in the third period. I mean, you're not down. The game isn't out of reach at that point. He takes a silly penalty. I you know, it was funny when he got went up to the mic and said, I was trying to rip my stick out of his hands, and he, you know, got heard over the mic because the mic was live from the ref. But you know what? You know Nashville's got the third-ranked power play in the NHL. And you give them five opportunities, including a five-minute major when Brandon Tanev hit Sissons into the boards, yep. Boarded him from behind. You just can't. I mean, and of course, the Mark Stewart knocking it over Connor Hellebuyck with 2 seconds to go in that after they had looked very good on that five-minute kill,
yep.
And had killed the majority of it and really looked like they were going to get out of it and would have been able to potentially build some momentum. You know, I mean, that was just the dagger in the heart. But you know, I was looking back to last November, which is the road trip everybody remembers that the team went 0-4. Those were against Central Division opponents.
Yes.
But it's an interesting parallel. I mean, they just don't score enough goals. They had 8 goals for last year, 21 goals against. This year,
on that 4-game road
trip. Sure. This year, they had 6 goals for, 20 goals against.
Yeah, well, those numbers are horrendous.
And the penalty kill was woeful. I mean, it was 7 out of 19 opportunities that he got scored on. So, I mean, that's you just can't allow that kind of special teams effort if you want to win hockey games. And like at the end of the day, like as he said, and it's true, you really couldn't afford. I'm not doom and gloom and saying that the season's over, because there's plenty of, you know, that could happen throughout the season, but the fact of the matter is you could ill afford to lose, you know, all 5 games of this road trip and really kind of like fall. I mean, again, you're only 3 points back of Dallas for the wild card.
You've played the most games in the NHL, worth pointing out.
Yeah, but I'm just simply saying, like, it could ill afford to lose all of the games, and they did.
And Dave, we could talk all day long about what went wrong with this road trip, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they weren't good in the faceoff circle. They took too many penalties. They didn't get enough shots on net. But at the end of the day, Drew, to me, what's wrong with this team right now is they just don't have any room for error with the injuries that they have and the lack of offensive production they're getting from most of the team, right? You're just not getting a lot of offense from players that aren't Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine. I mean, Laine's got 1 goal in his last 9 games, but he's an 18-year-old rookie.
Sure.
I mean, you can't expect Patrick Laine to get a hat-trick every night. I mean, I think Patrick Laine, there's a good chance he could score a hat-trick tomorrow afternoon against Nashville. He's got that much talent, but this team just can't take these timely penalties. I actually thought, and I mentioned this, I was doing the pre and post with Rick last night,
yeah.
And boy, were those callers angry after the game.
Like an old man returning soup at a deli?
I thought, Drew, before Brandon Tanev, pardon me, before he took that boarding penalty,
yeah.
That 5-minute boarding penalty, I actually thought that the Jets' best line was the Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev, Marco Dano line. Brandon Tanev had a couple of good scoring chances in the first couple of periods. I thought Adam Lowry was doing a great job digging up pucks and, you know, hitting bodies. I think he was the hits leader in that game. I thought that line was great. And, you know, Tanev's penalty, the Jets almost killed it off.
Sure.
Well, I mean, Ryan Johansson scored with, what was it, 3 seconds left in that power play?
2, I believe, but yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, they almost killed off a 5-minute penalty. We saw, you know, a couple of weeks ago in Winnipeg, Kyle Clifford took that boarding penalty. The Jets scored 2 goals. So I thought that had the ability to kind of turn the tide for the Jets in that game. But, you know, it was poor defensive coverage. You know, Buff coughs up the puck, and you know it ends up on Ryan Johansson's stick, and he's a sniper.
Well, that was a different power play, though. That wasn't the 5-minute major.
That was the second goal.
That was the second goal. That
right. Yeah. Sorry, Mark Stewart.
There's so many power play goals last night.
Yes,
it's hard to
keep
track.
There were 3 goals. Sorry, Mark Stewart whiffed on the James Neal shot.
I just don't know what his logic was in that instance.
Well, he was just trying to clear the puck, but I mean it was an unfortunate goal. But look, you can't put all of the blame on Mark Stewart or Dustin Byfuglien in this game. I mean, the Jets haven't been scoring more than 1 goal in games. You're not going to win against a team like Nashville scoring 1 goal.
No, you can't. I mean, they certainly have their share of the blame, but there's plenty of blame to go around among all the skaters that were on the Winnipeg Jets last night.
The one thing I will say, though, having listened to the post-game audio, is I actually didn't think they were as defeated as I expected. Like, I was listening to it, and when it went to Blake Wheeler, I thought, oh, God, this is going to be, like, he's going to be surly, simply because, you know, he's the captain, and he's got to be pissed off, and his team's lost 5 games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually sounded that he still has a lot of confidence in the group. And I thought it was an interesting tactic, because it wasn't what I anticipated, and I thought it was a good approach for him as the captain to take. And so I didn't think it was as defeatist as I was anticipating.
Well, let's hear from Paul Maurice. This is his post-game comments where he addresses the decision to bench Scheifele and Wheeler and Laine for pretty much the entirety of the third period. He also touches on Blake Wheeler and his leadership. This is Paul Maurice from last
Mark
night.
And Blake have been carrying this club in so many ways. I'd run them 15 minutes through two periods. They were frustrated with their game. They're going to play again. We've got other players here. I have to understand that it's not two or three guys up front. They got to get it done, right? They all have a piece of being ready, and sometimes they need to get on the ice and feel that responsibility.
Blake took a lot of the ownership on himself today from a leadership standpoint.
That's a captain's. That's why he's the captain, and I don't put any of that on him at all. Plays the same way every night, competes hard, and when he was on the bench, he was cheering for his teammates, so he handles it. Everything perfectly. He'll always feel when the team's not winning, as the leaders do, that they need to do more. I don't think Blake can do more. I think we can do more as a group. And if we just, but the idea that if we just play our game, we win that one, that's not right either. So we've got some work to do.
Okay, your thoughts on Paul Maurice's comments, his decision to bench Wheeler and Scheifele in line A for the entirety of the third period, not saying that it was the fault of those three players for the benching, saying that he wanted to sit them down so the other players, the other forwards, the other defensemen can start to take some ownership and feel some responsibility for the team's performance.
Yeah, I just don't understand the logic from Paul Maurice there. I understand sitting Mark Scheifele on the bench. He takes an unfortunate slashing penalty. It leads to a goal by Colin Wilson early in the third period. The Jets go down 4-1. And even though the Jets have come back, Drew, from third period deficits twice this year, I mean, just the way the Jets have been playing, you just didn't get the feeling that this was going to be one of those cardiac games, as Dave Minuk likes to say, right? So I understand Mark Scheifele being benched. But Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler, I mean, Blake Wheeler had two goals on this road trip. You remember, he got the big goal against the Minnesota Wild that got the Jets back into the game. He almost had two goals that game.
He had the goal that was disallowed as well on the offside play.
I just don't understand Wheeler and Laine benching an entire line. And as far as, you know, they got 15 minutes in the first two periods, that's what you'd expect their minutes to be in any game. I mean, these are guys, maybe it was a little bit higher, but you expect those guys to be around 18 minutes, 20 minutes a game, especially when you're talking about the fact that they play a lot on the power play, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. And Wheeler plays on the penalty kill as well. So it was very curious. When you're down 4-1 and you need some goals, you expect guys like Laine and Wheeler and Scheifele to be the guys that are going to, you know, pick up the slack and get goals for you. So,
hang on, did Paul Maurice give up on the game at that point in time by benching those guys? Did he give up on the game 35, you know, very shortly into the third period by putting his three best players on the bench and not getting them off for the entirety of the rest of the period?
Well, I'll let Dave get in here in a second, but as far as I'm concerned, I don't know if he was giving up on the game. I think he was sending a message to that line specifically, to Mark Scheifele specifically, Scheifele and Wheeler being, you know, two leaders of this team, guys that have letters on their jerseys. I think he was sending a message to them and the rest of the team that they just aren't playing well enough.
And I think, to be honest with you, I think he just comes back after the game and says, okay, well, now I need to defuse this, because knowing the market when he's in and knowing that there's going to be a lot of scrutiny, I think he knows that people are going to try and make something out of this. So what does he as a veteran coach do? He says, I was trying to take the pressure off of that top line and make the other players feel that responsibility. I mean, you know, he's a coach. I mean, at the end of the day, and he's got an objective, and he may want to send a message to his team, but he might not want to do it through the media. So his approach is, I'm going to send a message by benching them. And I mean, like you...
So he's sending that line the message in the midst of the game, and then at the end of the game, he spins it a different
way. That's right. That would be the way I interpret his actions, simply based on the fact that it occurs right after the
Scheifele penalty.
Because the truth is, you know, you could do that Scheifele penalty and then maybe sit them the next couple shifts, then get them out there. But the fact of the matter is that you do it right after the Scheifele penalty. They don't play another shift. So it would seem to lead, the logic would seem to lead down the path of he was sending a message to them. And then again, like I said, he's a veteran. He's been in the media. He knows how the media asks questions. So he says, I'm going to defuse the situation. I'm going to say that I'm putting it on. Because if he does, think about it. If he calls out his top line, mm-hmm. especially this early in the season, sure, it was a disastrous road trip. But if he's calling out his top line, that's a big thing to do.
Especially because his top line really was the best line on the road trip.
Right. I mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, which is damning with faint praise given how bad the road trip was. But you really can't argue with the performance of Scheifele and Wheeler and Laine or Ehlers or whatever else.
So that's all I'm saying. So that's why I think, like I said, he's this isn't his first rodeo. He sits there and he goes, okay, well, now I got to figure out how to massage this back. I've punished them. Now we're going to change this up, and we're going to change the narrative with the media saying this wasn't on those three players. It was on the entire team. I want the entire team to, as he said, feel that responsibility.
And Dave, if you think about it, the comments by Maurice mean nothing. I mean, it's his actions on the bench, right, that speak louder than his comments to the assembled media, right? And I agree with you. I think, you know, he's spinning his answer there, and he's not going to say, well, you know, Scheifele took a bad penalty, so I decided to, you know, bench the entire line to prove a point here. He's not going to say that, right? I think that, you know, this team, I think Maurice wants a response out of his team. I think he knows that they weren't going to probably come back in that game. They were in the middle of a terrible losing streak, and that was a message to try to get a response from his team tomorrow afternoon against Nashville.
We'll come back to more on the road trip and more about tomorrow afternoon. Let's head to break. When we return, Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play voice. He joins us next as we discuss the Jets and the Predators, the rematch tomorrow afternoon. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday afternoon, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're thrilled to welcome back to the show Willie Donick. Willie is the Nashville Predators TV play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be with you guys. I will be in your city very shortly, if all goes according to plan here. I'm actually heading over to the airport right now for the rematch.
Well, we certainly appreciate you joining us on your way over to the airport. You looking for a place to watch college football tonight? Is that what team is yours?
Yeah, I mean, we got a big game, at least a big game locally here in Nashville, Vanderbilt, where I attended.
Okay.
Played a little basketball back in the day, but the football game tonight between
UT.
Vanderbilt and Tennessee.
Yeah. We're watching UK, University of Kentucky in Louisville here in studio right now. And that's shaping up right now. A bit of an upset as UK is up 4 points on Louisville.
Willie, Drew's wife is from Kentucky, so that's why we're forced to watch this game. He's actually wearing a Kentucky T-shirt right now.
Exactly.
Oh, well, I'm impressed that you're big into Kentucky football, because basketball usually is what carries the freight down there.
I'm certainly big into Kentucky basketball as well. And actually, you know what? I always appreciate Vanderbilt football, because that's usually the only team that the University of Kentucky can beat on a regular basis.
I know. It's like whoever wins that game has got a chance for a decent season. Whoever loses does not. But actually, this could break the mold here if Vanderbilt can upset Tennessee tonight. But we'll see.
There you go. Anyways, let's get back to the world of hockey. Willie, obviously last night the Jets and the Predators did battle in Nashville. The rematch goes tomorrow afternoon here in Winnipeg. A 5-1 Predators victory over the wounded Winnipeg Jets. You know, what were your impressions of that, of watching the Winnipeg Jets last night? I mean, we have our bias, and of course we watch them much closer than you would on a regular basis. But for a guy seeing the Jets probably for the first time live last night, what were your, you know, thoughts on the performance of the Winnipeg Jets?
Overall, I would say it's clear that they're missing some of the key guys that are not there. But with Toby Enstrom out and Tyler Myers out, you know, that's a number one pair. And then you take away Matthew Perreault and a couple of the other forwards, Brian Little, they're not available. So I think the depth is an issue right now for them. And I really like some of their young players long term, but it's hard for those guys to carry it right now for the Jets. So I think the Predators just took advantage of that, and we'll see if the Predators' depth is affected. We're not sure what's going to happen, but the Predators lost a couple forwards during the game last night and also didn't have Ryan Ellis, so maybe that will even things out.
Willie, Pekka Rinne picked up the win for the Nashville Predators yesterday, and he's been one of the hottest goalies in the NHL as of late. Certainly in November, his numbers have been very good, and you look at his numbers on the year, he's got 9 wins, his goals against average is 1.98, save percentage 9.35. Last year, even though the Nashville Predators had a pretty successful season, Pekka Rinne struggled a little bit. His numbers were not, let's say, Pekka Rinne-esque. So what's been the reason why Pekka Rinne has been able to put up such good numbers so far this season?
It's hard to put your finger on why. I think a few of the games early this season, they thought maybe he was trying a little too hard. And I think they had a talk a few weeks back as the calendar started to turn to November. And they tried to stress to him, just let the game come to you. Don't try to do too much, and just let your natural athleticism be what guides you. And I think when you look through the years, that's always been a strength of Pecorine. When he's on, he's not even thinking, and his athleticism naturally happens. He covers ground, uses that big frame really, really well. When he struggles, I do think he looks a little busier. And I think that's maybe what hurt him a little bit last year. I also think the team just went through a stretch last year. They went through a stretch of where they went 9-15-5 last year, and everything just seemed to be going in, but it seemed like there were two-on-ones or breakaways every night. It wasn't a whole lot of soft goals that Pekka gave up during that stretch. I think that affected his overall numbers. But there were a lot of doubters, I think, coming into this year, but it's really nice to see him bouncing back. He has certainly elevated the whole team.
Willie, has the team changed at all since Mike Fisher has become the captain?
I think every team is different. This is what I hear from Peter Laviolette a lot. If you look, there's not a whole lot of roster turnover, but when you trade the captain, like Shea Weber, that's an automatic change of the dynamic of the locker room. And then, subtly, guys like Paul Gostad and Eric Nystrom and Barrett Jackman, veteran guys who are not back this year, that also changes some things. So you bring in P.K. Subban, you've got a couple other younger players, and maybe a guy like Roman Josi, a guy like Philip Forsberg, are looking now to take a little bit more of a leadership role, a little more vocal role. And I do think it took a few weeks to get all of that settled. And that was the challenge, I think, for Mike Fisher. But Mike Fisher has always been captain's material. I think anybody that's been around him would agree.
Willie Donick is our guest on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, you mentioned that it took a couple weeks to get this team going. If you'd asked people maybe, 10 days ago, they would say that the Predators were one of the most disappointing teams very early in this 2016-17 season. They've righted the ship since then. They've now got 10 wins in their 20 games played. They seem to be on the right track to where everyone expected them, which is a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Just a matter of sort of all the new pieces getting used to one another? Was that the big sort of problem early on in the year?
I think there were two things. One of them we just talked about, I think just trying to get everybody, as they say, the right seat on the bus, right seat on the plane with the trading of the captain. The other thing that I think happened, besides another sidebar, would be a pretty tough schedule. They played some pretty good teams early, a lot of road games early, and they went out west and didn't have their act together very well. But I think the other big thing was, subtly, when you bring in a P.K. Subban, you know that's going to take a little time for him to get used to his partner. But P.K. got banged up a little bit in training camp. He missed some practices. And the guy that he's paired with now, Mattias Ekholm, was at the World Cup in Sweden, went pretty deep into that competition. The other new pair, because it's the same guys that are back next year, but they didn't play together from a year ago, that's Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. Roman Josi was at the World Cup, played all the way to the end of it, and then Ryan Ellis also missed some practices, got banged up early in training camp. So I think that's what I look at as an issue. It took a while for those top four to start gelling, but they're now playing a lot better. They look like they're getting much more comfortable with each other, and I think that's really helping.
Willie, I got to ask you about Victor Arvidsson. Every single time I watch this guy play, I'm more and more impressed. And he's on the top line right now with Ryan Johansson and James Nealon. He was getting bumped around a little bit by Buff, but you watch the team more than anybody. Is this one of the most underrated forwards in the league right now?
I think he is just, I agree with you. I think he's just starting to get noticed, and he's taking a big step forward from last year. We started to see it some during parts of last year, but it's really starting to happen for him this year. He's got an incredible motor. And like you pointed out, he can take a hit. He'll get bounced around. It's almost like he's made of rubber or something. He just gets thrown around that small frame, but he bounces back up, and he'll go right back into that tough area in the front of the net. He knows he's going to get hit. He'll go into the boards and win a puck battle. And then when he gets a little space, he actually has pretty good skill. He's got a pretty good shot, and he can make some moves around the net. So it's been a great pickup. He was a guy that wasn't drafted, I think, until he was, 21 years of age, a late bloomer. People passed on him a few times because he's so small, but he's made a big difference for them, no doubt.
Yeah, he's a fourth rounder.
Willie Donick, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Willie is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, you mentioned Pekka and just how impressive he's been this season, and he has been. He's been tremendous for the Predators. He started 17 of the Predators' 17 of the Predators' 20 games so far this season. Obviously, that's a workload that's not realistic for him to continue. When do you see Peter Laviolette maybe tapping the brakes a little bit and getting UC Saros some more starts, given that he's now the backup over Marek Mazanek?
It's a question that gets asked a ton around here. The last couple of years especially, as Pekka is now getting into his 30s, I think he just turned 34 years of age. It's hard to expect him to play 70 games, even though if you asked him to do it, he would gladly do it. I think that is a big question going forward, is how are they going to try to get him to rest? Now, they haven't had a whole lot of back-to-back. They haven't had him play back-to-backs. And I think there is a good chance. I don't know this, but I think there's a chance that you might see UC Saros tomorrow. And that's been a little competition going on as well. Marek Mazanets, who's played more, played a couple years ago when Pekka had the extreme injury, the hip infection that cost him over half a season. Maz got thrown in there and actually had his moments, played pretty well at times. But he has not, even though he won the job, he has not played well when he's had a chance. Saros, on the other hand, when he's had a chance to play, played great against the Pittsburgh Penguins, got a win, and he's been almost lights out in Milwaukee. So I'm not surprised that they called him up, and I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he's in there tomorrow. But going forward, I think it's still a wait and see. But Saros seems to be the guy long term that they really like, even though he's kind of unique too, almost like that Victor Arvidsson mold. Got that unbelievable motor, that competitiveness to make up for that lack of size.
Willie, Predators defenseman Roman Josi had a career-high 61 points last season. He's got 12 points in 20 games so far this year. He picked up 2 assists against the Jets last night. Is he just off to a slow start, or is there a little bit more cause for concern there as far as his offensive numbers?
I think, like I said before, I think when he played with Shea Weber for basically, three or four consecutive seasons. Now, the first year when they lost Ryan Suter to free agency, to the Minnesota Wild, they had the lockout shortened 2013 season. That was the first year they wanted to put Josi and Weber together. Josi got hurt some that year. Same thing happened the next year. But once they gelled, those two guys played a ton of minutes together. So I think there's been an adjustment for Roman. But I think he's now learning a lot about Ryan Ellis, and I think you're starting to see the numbers come around. I'm not too concerned, but I think as they continue to play more together, then I think the numbers will even be more pronounced. I think Roman certainly will get there. I don't know if he's going to get 60 points, but I think the offensive output will be where you expect it.
Willie, we'll let you go on this last question. I mean, so much ink and so much airtime has been spent talking about the PK Subban for Shea Weber deal. And we know what PK can do on the ice. And you mentioned that he a bit of a slow start, but he's sort of finding a stride off the ice. For a team in Nashville that might need a bit of a spark, in gathering a little bit of the attention, although they're very well received in Nashville, what has PK brought to the table? What has he done? How has he been sort of in that off-ice ambassador role so far?
Well, he's been exactly what everybody, I think, was expecting and everybody was hoping for. I mean, this guy, number one, he's done a great job, I think, of coming in to the locker room and sort of just being a listener, gradually letting the leadership, letting his role happen naturally. Coach Laviolette has talked about how coachable he is, and I think on the ice, it's really starting to happen. He's starting to get better and better, and the plus-minus isn't where you want it to be, and the possession numbers aren't quite, I think, where they will be, but he still gets his points. He still makes some dynamic plays, and I think you're going to see more of that. But to answer your question about the ambassador, it's a great point. I think you look at where Nashville is now. They got a chance to sell out every game for the first time ever, which may not sound like a big deal in Canada, where, that's almost the expectation. You're going to sell out almost every game. Here, only go back about 5 or 6 years. If you sold out 10 or 12 out of the 41 games, that wasn't a bad year. But now the expectation is sell out every game. So the base is much better. But where PK is adding a level, he reaches people that still haven't paid much attention to the Predators, even though now they've been here close to 20 years. He's reaching football fans who have been just hardcore football, not paying much attention to hockey. They know the Predators are around. They've heard about them. but they're not really engaged. PK reaches that audience, which is really, I think, going to make a difference.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. He's on his way to the airport to travel to Winnipeg. Willie, travel safe. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll see you tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, we'll be there. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Willie. Thanks very much. It's head to break when we return. Much more on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about Toby Enstrom's absence and what that means for the Jets blue line. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Yeah! Toby had to get home to Sweden for family situation that's come up briefly, and with the full and complete support of the Winnipeg Jets organization, and we're hopeful that he comes back and it's a positive result, and then we'll get him back real soon. But I don't know when he's going to be able to return.
Jets head coach Paul Maurice speaking about Toby Enstrom, who's left the team to return to Sweden to deal with a personal matter. We, of course, echo the calls that have been said, you know, wishing him all the best as he deals with this personal matter, the likes of which we are not yet certain about the details, but we certainly wish him the best in that. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 25 minutes before the top of the hour. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
I don't know about you guys right now, but I can't handle that smell that's coming over from Rory over here, and it's not a bad smell.
And Dave asked him to, he got some food delivered to the studio because he's been here since about 9 a.m. or whatever, and you know, Dave asked him to share. Rory's Dikembe Mutombo'd him and said no sharing allowed.
Rory, I'm not sure what that is. It looks like a stir fry of some sort.
A Hunan.
Oh, it's a Hunan.
Does Rory like his Kung Pao spicy?
Ezzy likes Hunan.
You know what? Find me, what food does Ezzy not like?
I don't think there actually is anything I don't like.
Did you get a free pizza delivered last night?
No. Nope.
Really? That's disappointing.
No, that was 2 weeks ago.
I know, but I thought there was a precedent set that every time you and Rick do pre and post together, some random fan would just drop off a free pizza for you.
Rory, that smells so good. Just don't be surprised if I kind of lunge at you with a fork.
Yeah, just come on over. Now he's just going to be Ezzy eating on air for the next 25 minutes or so. Anyways, the Jets obviously miss Toby Enstrom at being out of the lineup. It's a significant loss on the back end for Toby, who underappreciated, I would suggest, and this year has been sort of particularly steady for the Winnipeg Jets back end, shooting the puck way more. All of a sudden, he's firing like he's got a Dustin Byfuglien howitzer back there. But the Jets' defense without Toby Enstrom, it's a significant loss to the lineup going forward with no return date yet known.
Yeah, Drew, and I, out of the three of us, and going back to when Richie was on the show, I was probably the most critical of Tobias Enstrom, and I realize he does a lot of good things. He moves the puck really well, very smart player. I've been critical more so of how he gets beat down low by bigger forwards.
His size is his size.
Well, and also his offensive production has not been good the last couple years. What did he have, 19, 20 points last year? So I think he can be better offensively, especially when you're one of the highest paid guys on the team. But I have to admit, Tobias Enstrom has been very good this season, especially in the second half of the start to the season. In November, he's been better here at home and on the road, but it is a significant loss. And as you mentioned, Drew, we hope that whatever family matter he's dealing with, that everything goes okay and he's able to join the Jets as soon as possible. But certainly last night, guys, it was a little bit puzzling to me that they broke up Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien and put Ben Chiarot on that top pair. Not to say that Ben Chiarot isn't able to play a top pairing role, but just because Josh Morrissey and Dustin Byfuglien have been so good together.
Sure.
And I thought that, that second pair of Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba wasn't very good. And, so I think,
Not that Byfuglien and Chiarot were any good, either. Byfuglien had a bad game last night.
Well, Byfuglien was on the ice for all six goals.
Yeah. The 5-5 against when 1-4.
Yeah, and he scored it, right?
Right.
So, I didn't think he had his best game. But, Dustin Byfuglien is arguably, one of the MVPs of this team. And after Scheifele and Wheeler, he certainly, I think the best overall defenseman on the Jets. So, I mean, I realize that, you know, he was getting criticized quite a bit after last night's game, but you know, the Tobias Enstrom injury is critical for the Jets. I mean, they're already playing without Tyler Myers. We don't know when he's going to be back. He's most likely not going to be back tomorrow afternoon, Dave. At least we haven't been told that he's going to be back tomorrow afternoon, so we have to assume that it might be another week or two before Tyler Myers comes back. They're not going to have Tobias Enstrom, so, you know, the Jets have to roll up their sleeves again and you know, play really well defensively and you know, make up for the loss of these two key defensemen.
Really hard. I mean, you just can't. I mean, you lose Myers and you're like, okay, well, you know, okay, fine. Then you've still got Enstrom, you've still got Trouba, you've still got Bufflin, you've still got Morrissey. The rest can kind of fill in as they may. But then you lose Enstrom, and Enstrom is just steady, and he's like, I mean, you hear Maurice talk so glowingly about what the things that he does right. And the truth is, you know, to Ezzie's point, we don't know how long Myers is going to be because he's not in the near group, as Coach Maurice likes to reference.
Yeah. Brian Little expected to be the next and, skater coming off injured.
And Brian Little,
for the Jets.
For the record, he said, we'll be skating next week. Skating next week. Now, he's skating already, but I mean, I assume by that he meant taking contact.
In a practice with the team. Because usually the coaches like to see a player take a full practice without a non-contact jersey on before returning.
And Dave, it was the same thing with Drew Stafford. Before he came back, he had to have a contact jersey on and he had to have a regular practice. So Brian Little's probably, you know, going to be back in the next 2 weeks, I would say. Probably not in the next week.
Which is approximately what we were told when he first went down with injury. It's actually fairly accurate because they said end of November. So, I mean, that timeline seems to be holding. But going back to Enstrom, I mean, the truth is we don't know how long it's going to be because the coach said, you know, he's gone back. We don't have a timeline on it. Then when asked the next day if he had anything further, he indicated, no, we don't know yet. Probably have a better idea tomorrow. So realistically, and of course tomorrow being today, was there's no skate today, so we don't know anything today. We'll know something maybe tomorrow.
When it's been a good news story, Paul Maurice has used the term, it's a good news story, and then, you know, generally, what if it's a pregnancy?
No, this is obviously negative. I mean, there's the connotation can't be misunderstood. It's clearly not a positive, because you're right. Like, you know, there's always, like, even if he's trying to, like, when Chris Thorburn, for example, was having his you know, his daughter, for example, he didn't have it, his wife did.
Yes.
But when they were giving birth to their child, the you know, he was glib, but he was happy glib. This was clearly, there was a serious tone, and he said the Winnipeg Jets organization stands with Tobias Enstrom. So there was no misunderstanding it. I think it's clearly a serious situation, serious enough for a hockey player to miss, you know, professional hockey games, and that's not something generally they do lightly. So again, we don't know what it is. There's no point in speculating, but the fact of the matter is his presence on the ice is really missed. I mean, again, you just look at what the Jets' defense hasn't been great. I'm not saying that they're the best defense, even with Tobias Enstrom. But when you have a veteran who's playing a steady game like he has been, you really just can't afford to lose a player of that caliber.
Yeah, Dave, Enstrom plays big minutes, even strength on the power play. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back to the D pairings there, you know, without Myers and without Enstrom, I'm not saying that this is going to happen because the Jets weren't on the ice today, but I wouldn't be surprised if Ben Chiarot moves down to the second pair with Jacob Trouba and they move Josh Morrissey back up to that top pair with Dustin Bufflin. And my logic behind that is just because Morrissey and Buff have been paired up for most of the season and Buff didn't play well last night, and I didn't think that Chiarot was very strong against Nashville either. So wouldn't be surprised, and I also wouldn't be surprised if maybe they make a call up here and maybe a guy like Julian Melchiori is called up. Again, we haven't, you know, received any word, but right now the Jets don't have any other defensemen.
They don't have
on
a seventh defenseman with them or anything. You're absolutely right. And that's something that certainly would be logical. I'd be surprised if they would call up Melchiori and immediately have him enter the lineup for tomorrow afternoon.
Well, and Dave, you know, Dave could speak more to this, but the Moose are on the road right now, so I don't know how difficult that would be to call up Julian Melchiori, but
it's not. They're in Milwaukee tonight for a game. They're in Chicago tomorrow, and then they're in Rockford on Wednesday. So, I mean, he's close. He's a couple of hours away. It's not really going to be a...
Sure, but if they were going to call him up, and if they were, and I mean, I hear where you're coming from, you would have thought it would have happened already, because, I mean, what's the point of him going all the way to Milwaukee and only to come all the way back?
Well, I guess in the sense that they know that the defense is healthy enough that they're not pulling anybody from the lineup tomorrow. And then when do the Jets play next? They play Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So in theory, you've got Melchiori playing tonight in Milwaukee, tomorrow in Chicago.
And then he could come back.
And then he comes back tomorrow night, and then he would play potentially, or just be there as a security blanket.
Thin, because I mean, we have seen instances, of course, where somebody gets banged up in a warm up.
But remember, the team knew that they weren't skating today, so they're going. So, I mean, this is the rationale.
Right.
Is the team knows that they came out of Nashville unscathed from an injury perspective. They know that today is a rest day. They're playing an early game tomorrow. The coaches are probably still, they're still at the arena today. They're still talking. They're just, the team that isn't practicing. So the team, the coaches know, do we need to call someone up? And if they do, then they'll make the call. It doesn't matter if he's already in Milwaukee. I mean, they'll fly him back.
As long as they make the call tonight as opposed to tomorrow
That's
morning.
Right.
The red eye.
Yeah.
The red eye from Milwaukee.
Well, David, it also has a lot to do with how long Tobias Enstrom is going to be out of the lineup, right? Is it going to be, you know, one or two more days, or is it going to be a week?
Well, and I think that's why they were kind of waiting to hear from him, based on the severity of the situation in Sweden, whether he's going to be, like you said, as another day or two or a week or two. Because if it's going to be the latter, then, you know, of course, you're calling Melchiori up as insurance. If it's the former, then you're saying, okay, well, we can hold the, you know, we can tread water for one game, and then we've got Enstrom back, so there's no point in pulling Melchiori in just to sit in the penalty in the press box.
I actually thought Melchiori was good in his four games with the Jets.
No, he's looked good. Yeah. He's been fine.
Let me put it this way. I have seen enough from him that I wouldn't blink an eye if he got a game in over Postma or over Stewart or over Sherrod at this point in time.
His numbers are good. Everything with his, if you look at the advanced stats, even with Melchiori, they've been solid. So
there's certainly not a significant drop off between him and the guys who have been regularly getting minutes on the Jets back end.
Big defenseman, you know, physical. Make simple plays, no problem with him on the third pair if they decide to bring him up.
Well, time will tell, and of course we'll keep you updated on what happens in that regard. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Jets expansion draft options. Ezzy wrote an article for IllegalCurve.com. We'll touch on it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
There's only three players here that have scored 20 goals in the NHL. That would be Matthew Perreault, Jakob Silverberg, and Matt Reed. So when you look at Matthew Perreault, again, in Washington when George McPhee was the GM there, so George knows him very, very well, he's your number one center. That already creates a lesser than ideal type of position up the middle of the ice.
TSN's Craig Button as the expansion draft. Now that the Las Vegas franchise is going to be known, pardon me, as the Vegas Golden Knights, expansion draft talk heating up this week. Ezzy, you used that opportunity to piggyback an article about the Winnipeg Jets and their, you know, a proposed or an estimated expansion draft protection list on IllegalCurve.com. I'll tweet out a link to that article in case anybody missed it. We know the Jets have to protect, currently, Dustin Byfuglien and Toby Enstrom, as both of those gentlemen have no move clauses. Then the question becomes for the Winnipeg Jets and their brain trust, do they go with the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and 1 goalie protection example, or 8 skaters of any kind and 1 goalie protection example? And so, Ezzy, why don't you sort of run down through your article. A lot of talk this week that Matthew Perreault is going to be left exposed by the Winnipeg Jets. And I got to say, I don't quite see how that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I ended up having Matthew Perreault exposed under option 2, and I provided my rationale there. And it was actually Dave that first came out with the article back in March when we weren't sure how many teams were going to be awarded a franchise. At that point, it could have been Las Vegas and Quebec. We knew it was going to be most likely Las Vegas, but we weren't sure about Quebec. And it was timely because Craig Button and the TSN staff came out with their protected list right around the same time that I came out with my article here,
and timely because Las Vegas team got a name that day.
Yeah, and that's what kind of spurred me writing the article here. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see, Drew, if the Jets go with option 1 or option 2, and I kind of provided the rationale why they would go with option 2 over option 1. And it's pretty obvious, you would want to protect one extra defenseman. But if you end up protecting one extra defenseman, that means that 3 forwards that you were going to protect under option 1 aren't going to be protected under option 2. So here are the guys, Drew, that I had as locks to be protected. And Tobias Enstrom and Byfuglien are locks because they have no trade clauses.
Let me just interrupt you for a second. If the Jets don't make a trade with regard to their back end. Meaning if you know, Trouba and Myers and Bufflin and Enstrom are still on the team,
yep,
on July 15th or whatever the day is, I think June 15th, where the Jets have to submit their protected list, is there any chance that Trouba or Myers are left exposed by the Winnipeg Jets? Really, is there a chance that Myers is left exposed by the Winnipeg Jets?
Yes, and I had him exposed under option one because essentially it comes down to guys Myers or Trouba because Bufflin and Enstrom are automatically exempt. Pardon me, not automatically exempt, automatically protected because they have no movement clauses. That means that it becomes between Trouba and Myers. And, you know, I went back and forth and I had to give this some thought here because, you know, I actually would probably argue that at this point in his career, Myers is a better overall defenseman than Trouba. The reason I'm protecting Trouba here, guys, is because he has a lower cap hit and he has a higher upside.
But that's on, you're using that as the, on the 7-3-1 example.
Yes. Under option one, the Jets only protect three defensemen.
Right. 7-3-1. Now,
under option two, Drew, I have both Myers and Trouba protected. And to me, that's the only reason why they go to option two, because you can only protect 9 total players versus 11 total players. Now, you know, you mentioned Jacob Trouba being traded, and that's quite possible, but that doesn't make it any easier. If Trouba's traded, it's most likely going to be for a defenseman who's between the ages of 21 and 25 years old. So if the Jets do trade Trouba, they're still going to be in the scenario where they still have to decide between Myers and either Trouba slash whatever defenseman comes back in a trade. So if Trouba is traded, they could still go with option two.
You know, Dave, I don't see a way. I mean, right now, if the without a trade being, you know, being completed, I don't see the Jets exposing one of Tyler Myers or Jacob Trouba. So I think they have to go. I think they would go with the 4 defensemen and 4 forwards exposure option.
I'm inclined. That's what I thought they would do when I, like, as you said, I did it in March. The only embarrassing thing is I had to Alexander Burmistrov on my potentially protected. Now, in my defense, he had played well up until that point.
I think that ship has sailed at this point.
But I would change that one option. Now, having said that, I looked at the rest of my choices, and like Wheeler, Shifley, Little, fine. Those guys, obviously, those are the three for sure. You could insert Lowry or Perreault as the other option right there.
Let me stop.
I'm just saying for me personally, that's that. And then, you know, then I've got Bufflin, Enstrom, Myers, Trouba, and Hellebuck. So that would be the 9. So really, to me, it's just, do you want Lowry or do you want Perreault? Now, I know, again, we're not making this decision. The Jets coaching staff and the Jets brain trust is. Now, Coach Maurice loves Adam Lowry. I mean, people can dislike Adam Lowry. I think he's played better this year. But, like, the fact of the matter is, you know, Coach Maurice loves Adam Lowry. But he also loves, I think, what Matthew Perreault brings to the table as well. So that I think, is really the one flip for this team as to who they would protect under that option.
Can you, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, the first opportunity that they had to re-sign Matthew Perreault, even with a year left on his contract, they took that opportunity this past summer and signed him to a 4-year contract extension.
Yep.
I don't think they do that and then expose him in a potential expansion draft, you know, 10 months later.
By the way, there's something else to consider here, guys. I mean, under option two, if the Jets protect
option two being the 8 skaters,
right,
1 goalie.
So the 4 defenseman option. Basically, you're picking between exposing a defenseman versus exposing a forward, or you're actually exposing 3 forwards that you would have under option one. So the way I look at it, it does come down to Lowry or Perreault, or I guess you could throw Armia or Dano into that conversation. But for me, and I think Dave agrees with this, it's between Lowry and Perreault. And the reason why I picked Lowry is because of the lower cap hit, and I think that he would be taken by Las Vegas. Hold
but
on a second, Drew.
Okay.
There is an option here that even if the Jets do protect Perreault, expose Perreault, and they expose Myers, there's also a chance, based on other players that Vegas takes, they take Sean Matthias, who would be exposed as well. So it's not a guarantee that these guys get taken because they do have high salary cap hits. Matthew Perreault at $4 million is not going to be your number one center. I know Craig Button had him as his number one center, but Matthew Perreault is going to be a guy who you're not going to count on for primary
offense.
But
they're not going to get a number one center out of the expansion draft.
I'm just saying, I mean, it's not a guarantee that if Myers is exposed that he will be taken.
Yes, it's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that any of these guys who, you know, we're estimating are going to be exposed are going to get taken. I just don't see the Winnipeg Jets signing Matthew Perreault to a 4-year contract extension and then leaving him exposed. It just doesn't make sense to me. This is a guy that they obviously think so highly of. that what's going to change in 9 months' time.
And that's where the tough decision comes in, right, Drew? And I don't disagree with you, because for me it was a tough choice between Lowry and Perreault. And a lot of people on LegalCurve.com were giving me a hard time saying, oh, you know, well, you know, Perreault is a much better player and all of this and all of that. I mean, Lowry's got 5 goals and plays a key role on this team. So whatever you want to say, it's going to be between most likely Lowry or Perreault. Armia and Dano would be exposed under option two. It's going to be a tough decision to make.
It's a much easier decision for the Winnipeg Jets if they're able to swap out one of their defensemen. If they can go 7-3-1, only have to expose...
Well, how do you swap out a defenseman?
But as he's right,
make
you
a
can't.
Trade. Unless they make that
whatever defenseman comes back, Drew, you'd have to protect that defenseman.
Unless they make a trade for a guy who's in his first or just in his second year.
Not going to happen. They're not trading Trouba for a rookie defenseman. It's not going to be Trouba for Jacob Chychrun.
It might be. What makes you say so certainly that it wouldn't be? I think the Jets would
strongly
consider
that. Well, what makes you think it would be? The Jets, any trade, the Jets would want to be replacing Jacob Trouba with a defenseman who has the same amount of experience and potential as Jacob Trouba. Now, Jacob Chychrun has struggled in his rookie year. Chychrun, you know, it could be another example. All signs would indicate the Jets would want to have another defenseman that they can plug into the top four.
I don't disagree with anything.
I also don't think the Coyotes are trading Jacob Chychrun.
Your theory is plausible, obviously, is that in that they could do that to try and make this situation, if they thought so highly of Perreault or Lowry that they wanted to include them in that option one, they could go for a younger defenseman. I'm with Ez. I don't think they do that. But I'm saying, like, obviously it's plausible. That's the whole point. They're called scenarios.
Sure.
You know, we're playing it out in the sense that you could look at all possible potential situations.
And that would make you lean towards the Jets using option two, because even if they don't have Trouba to worry about, i.e. he's traded,
yeah,
there's a good chance. And sure, Drew, I know what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying, too.
They could, in theory, trade him for Brandon Carlo, a rookie defenseman.
Sure.
But I don't see that happening. I would expect the Jets to want a defenseman of similar age and experience coming back the other way.
Cam Fowler.
Sure, Hampus Lindholm, yeah. Morgan Riley. Both those guys aren't being traded, but those are, you know, comparables.
Ideas, yeah. I mean, I get what your point is. I totally understand what your point is as well. I just don't see the one about Matthew Perreault, and that's what TSN, what Craig and I think what Frank Saravelli and what they were all speculating is that Matthew Perreault would be exposed by the Winnipeg Jets. And I'm not certain that, I mean, obviously I'm not certain about anything, but I don't see how the Jets would sign him to a 4-year deal last summer and then expose him in the expansion draft shortly thereafter. I think Matthew Perreault is beloved for whatever reason. I mean, he's a decent player, but I think he's beloved by the Winnipeg Jets organization. I think Matthew Perreault loves the Winnipeg Jets organization as a flip side.
I think, even though I mentioned this in the article, I'm a big Perreault fan, Drew. You know that.
Yeah, I do.
But I think age and his injury concerns have to be factored in here.
Well, then they probably shouldn't have signed him to a 4-year contract extension.
Well,
I'm just saying,
when it gets down to Lowry or Perreault, I don't think the Jets want to lose Lowry either.
Look, they don't want to lose any of these guys. But the question is, which one would they be able to hold their nose and lose a little bit more than the other one? And that I'm not certain that they'd be happier losing Perreault just after signing him to a big contract extension.
Like I said, I look at the options the Jets have, and I really think, like, based on the current incarnation of this team,
yeah,
assuming that they have the four defensemen that they have that they need to, you know, two of which they have to protect and the other two which they'll want to protect.
Yeah.
My guess is that really it's just a flip between Lowry and Perreault.
Well, I mean,
I think that's the only way you can kind of look at it, because, like I said, I really can't see how, if the Jets are not as you've suggested, which is maybe have gotten a little bit younger, to not have to do that. And then, because remember, into your situation, which it would in quotes be ideal, because then they could go to option one, protect all the forwards they want. They'd have the three defensemen they want, and they would have a young defenseman, you know, first, second year defenseman that would not need to be protected in the draft. So, In an ideal world, your situation is the one they choose, because they get all the forward protection they need. They'll, like I said, protect the defenseman, and obviously Connor Hellebuyck is protected as well.
And Drew, to your point, I mean, again, I don't think it's completely out of the question that the Jets do trade Trouba for a defenseman who's either in their first or second year in the NHL. I'm not totally dismissing that. I'm just saying, ideally, I think they would want a one-for-one trade where they get back a defenseman who has the similar type of experience that Trouba has. But I mean, this expansion draft, guys, a team like the Winnipeg Jets might be hurt the most, because they have so many guys that are somebody's going to have to be exposed, right?
They're going to lose somebody. Right. The question is it a defenseman like Tyler Myers?
Right.
Is it Matthew Perreault? Is it an Adam Lowry? Is it a Marco Dano? Is it a, you know, Joel Armia? I mean, you can keep going. It's going to be one of those players the Jets are going to lose.
I think that the reality for this team, at least, is that with the depth they've now kind of gathered around them, that the one loss of one of those types of players is not going to be a major stumbling block.
I would agree with that statement. Let's head to break. When we return, David Pagnotta of the fourth period joins us to look for a look around the league. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program David Pagnotta. You can find David's work at thefourthperiod.com. David, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. How's it going over there?
Doing very well. How's it going with you? You're in Toronto?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad.
That's good. You got Grey Cup fever? Not so much.
Not me personally. Yeah. But there's a few people out here.
Okay, well, as long as there's a few, because there was some worry earlier in the week, though, there weren't even a few there. It may have gone lost in the big smoke this year, the Grey Cup.
They need to stop putting this event in Toronto.
There you go.
I know it's the big city and all that and whatever, the yada, yada, yada. Get it out of here. It's much better off in the rest of the country because we just don't appreciate it enough here.
Fair enough. There's some football analysis there from David. Obviously, we brought you on to talk hockey, not football. But, David, you were tweeting earlier in the week. I'm not sure if you were in Vegas for the announcement of the Vegas Golden Knights. But your thoughts on the announcement? We know they had some technological hiccups. But overlooking that, how do you think the announcement went with Bill Foley unveiling his new baby?
I think it was pretty good. I wasn't there. I actually mixed up the dates, so messed that one up. So they were the only ones to mess things up. But, the tech issues, it happens, whatever. It is what it is. But I'm just excited that we can actually attribute the Vegas NHL franchise to something more specific than the 31st team in the National Hockey League. And the Vegas Golden Knights are one that they took a lot of time with. They were very well-informed in how they were going to name this franchise and how they wanted it to reflect the community and why they went with Vegas instead of Las Vegas, because that's what majority of the people, pretty much everybody in the local community calls it. They really want this. As much as it is a tourist town, there's a strong local base, and it was evident by the season ticket drive, and it was evident by the 5,000-6,000 people that were there in Vegas, and you put this in a Canadian market, you're definitely going to get more than that. But the fact that they were able to draw that in Las Vegas was impressive. So I think the announcement was great. I like the logo. I think it's pretty cool. I'm really interested to see what the jerseys are going to look like in a few months, but even more so what the team is going to look like. But great first or second step, I guess, for this franchise, and we can all start speculating on who's going to end up there.
Dave, you're in TO, so we got to ask you about the Maple Leafs. They play the Washington Capitals tonight, and unfortunately they lost their last game against the Devils, but it was a very entertaining game. They lost in overtime, and they unfortunately gave up a 3-0 lead there. But certainly I think all of the talk was Austin Matthews finally getting out of that goal-scoring drought. He picked up two goals early on in that game. Are Leafs fans pretty happy where this team is right now? And are they, knowing that even though the team is, 500 and a little bit outside of a playoff spot right now, they're still excited with the way guys like Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, and William Nylander have played in their rookie seasons?
Yeah, there's a ton of excitement here because of those guys specifically. And, if this was if these guys weren't here and this was a 500 team, then everyone would be losing it. But, they still know that they're in the rebuilding phase. They know how rough last season was, and even though they were on board with it, the fan base was with the rebuild last year. It was pretty bad. There were some of the worst hockey games I've ever seen covering the sport. Occurred a few times with the Maple Leafs last season. So now you're starting to see the tide shift. You're seeing the future as it's being born here in Toronto with Matthews and Marner and like you said, Nylander and Soshnikov and Hyman and Brown and a lot of the younger players that they have up front. The crowd, after a shaky start for Freddie Anderson between the pipes out of the gate, have rebounded. He's rebounded, and the fan base has gotten on board with him as the starting goalie. There's excitement, but there's also realism. The fan base still understands the fact that this is going to be a good chance they're not making the playoffs, and they probably aren't going to and shouldn't throughout this, you know, the second official phase of the rebuild. And the fan base understands that. And if they can somehow, you know, make things interesting later on in the season, then that's just going to, you know, amp up the excitement for what's to come for this franchise. They got a lot of work to do, specifically on defense, but this is a team that's got a lot of good young pieces, and the fan base understands it, and they're on board. They're liking what they're seeing.
David, I'm always going to go back to Vegas if I have the option, so I'm going to ask you going about the Vegas franchise. You tweeted that the Raiders are going to be staying likely in Oakland. What kind of impact do you think that's going to have that the Las Vegas team, or the Vegas team, sorry, will not be the only, quote, game in town?
Yeah, I mean, that could be huge. If that ends up coming true, and I think it was Fox Sports West that reported it the morning of the announcement earlier this week, that they're working towards finalizing a deal to keep the Raiders in Oakland. And that's absolutely huge for the National Hockey League and for the Vegas franchise. To be the only the NHL wanted to be the first major sports league to be in Las Vegas. They got that done. And if they could get a buffer zone of a few years before another sports franchise comes in there, that gives them a huge advantage rather than coming into this market with other franchises in place. If they enter the season, you know, the same year that there's an NFL team, that there's an NBA team, the competition is a lot more significant going into it. Into a new market like this, you're going to give yourself a few years before, you know, another big-time sports franchise comes to town. It gives you an opportunity to kind of get sunken in with the fan base a little bit more. And if this team is going to be competitive like everybody expects them to be, like the owner expects them to be, like the GM expects them to be, kind of out of the gate, then that just adds to the excitement, and it adds to the validity of this team in that market versus some of the other sports leagues. Now, you know, for their sake, I hope it ends up holding true, and Oakland figures out their mess with the Raiders, and the NHL doesn't have to battle the NFL for it. But I do know that the NBA is going to be looking quite intensely, on how the fan base reacts to the NHL franchise. And in a few years, we could start hearing serious talk of the NBA moving over there. But first and foremost, they want to see how the NHL does, and that's another big push for the league and for the Golden Knights, being the only game in town. They get to build up that fan base credibility, and for their sake, you hope that they come out relatively competitive and battle for a playoff spot, because that'll just add to the excitement within that market.
So, David, I guess you're telling me that the NFL didn't take into account the Las Vegas Posse from 1994, the CFL team, the short-lived CFL team.
No, I guess not. You know, you overlook things. It's kind of like the Toronto market here.
Yeah.
The CFL, so.
David Pagnotta of the Fourth Period is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. David, looking around the league, you know, right now the Edmonton Oilers, I would say, you know, one of the surprises in the league, 12-8-2. They're ahead of the Pacific Division right now. Are they for real?
I see them more as I view the surprise a little bit differently. I'm not surprised that they're you know, 12-8-4. I'm more surprised that the San Jose Sharks and the LA Kings and even the Ducks aren't better than they are at this stage in the season. And the Kings have certainly rebounded, woken up. Big, you know, they got another game tonight in LA where they've just unveiled a brand new monument in commemorating the history of the team and the championships in 12 and 14. But I'm more surprised that those teams aren't doing better than I am with where the Oilers are sitting at right now. They should be a pretty solid hockey club. The defense is still going to be a concern for them, both at both ends of the rink, on the blue line and up front, which is similar to what's here in Toronto. But you know, you kind of expect them to continue the momentum, and you expect some of the other players to start stepping up a little bit more. You want to see a little bit more from Milan Lucic. You want to see a little bit more from some of the depth players that they have on the third line and fourth line to contribute a little bit more for this before this team becomes a legitimate contender. And they're still ways off from that. That blue line is not near what it needs to be. But I've liked what I've seen from them. You know, expected them to be good out of the gate, expected them to be competitive, to obviously be a fast team, but be a little bit more physical. And they've been doing that for the most part. Now it's just a matter of playing a well-rounded game overall as the opposition kind of adjusts their defensive game to what the Oilers bring to the table. Now that we're getting close to close to December, this is where teams start to really zone in on how they have to play in opposition, regardless of what team it is. So now you're going to see teams like the Oilers adjusting and having to adjust their plan of attack to combat the fact that the other teams know that they've got to double up sometimes on certain players and in certain situations.
Dave, the big news in the hockey world earlier this week was Brent Burns signing that 8-year, $64 million contract with the San Jose Sharks. What did you think of that contract?
Good deal. I know people are saying it's a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but what he's brought to the table the last 3-4 seasons, really, if he was playing perhaps in another market, he might have gotten a little more recognition from that performance. And it doesn't look like it's going to slow down anytime soon. Now, will it slow down in 6 years? Perhaps. But that comes with the territory. You give the guy the contract now for the next 4 or 5 years, and you hope that he maintains a steady pace of play in year 6, 7, and 8 with San Jose. There's a limited no trade clause. It's not a no movement clause, so it gives the team a little bit of flexibility down the road if they ever want to explore that. But this is a franchise type defenseman for them who took a little bit longer than normal to kind of come into his own. But, I mean, he's done it, and believe me, he would have gotten more than $8 million a season on the open market if he hit as a free agent July 1st. So there's really nobody that should be complaining about this deal for the San Jose Sharks. It was a great deal. I had a quick chance to chat with him later on in the day. He's excited, and that's where he wanted to be. He wanted to be in San Jose, and that's where he calls home now. That adds to being comfortable to play in that market. And to hopefully for his sake, he wants to get back to the Stanley Cup final and battle for a championship, just like everybody else in the league. But he's got that security now for him and his family. Totally worth it, and I say it was a good deal.
Dave, did Burnsy at all mention to you if he was going to shave anytime soon?
No, I think that's going to stick around for a while. I think we might see some more guys on the team start to grow this out because we see Thornton now that's in full swing and has been since last season. So. May get some more guys on the Sharks on that train.
Yeah, Patrick Eves has a nice beard going too in Dallas.
Yeah,
David, we're at about the quarter point, depending on which NHL city you're in, but about the quarter point of the season. Has anything really surprised you or caught you off guard that's happened so far this year?
I'm surprised at the Canadiens' play that it's been this consistent throughout the first quarter of the season. I expected them to do well. I love the fact that they brought in Shea Weber. I thought this was going to be a good move for him, where he would be in a kind of a dominant presence for the first probably 3 years of his stay in Montreal. Kind of, looking back on how Zdeno Chara was in his prime with the Bruins, kind of thought that that would be where a guy like Shea Weber would end up in the Eastern Conference and how he would perform. I like the additions of Shaw and Radulov. It gives them depth. It rounds out their top six and evidently their top nine. Was definitely surprised at the well-roundedness of this team and the offensive depth that they have on all four lines. They're rolling all four lines, and a few coaches have mentioned this throughout this first bit of the season already, that the Montreal Canadiens are a team that can roll four lines and get production at both ends of the rink from any one of those four that are on the ice at any given time. The defense has been sound, and the goaltending has been great. For the most part, even Al Montoya, despite a couple games here and there, and I disregard the 10-goal onslaught that Columbus brought forward. I forget about that one, but this is a team that's very well balanced. I know they want to add more to the roster later on in the season. If they keep this play up, then you can expect them to add to that team. But I'm surprised by that, and I'm surprised by the amount of offense the New York Rangers have been scoring continuously. Throughout this first bit of the season, those would be my two biggest surprises right now. And then, perhaps, like I mentioned earlier, teams like San Jose and the LA Kings and Ducks kind of not being as hot off the bat. And maybe you can attribute some injuries to the Kings roster anyway, with Quick not being there and Marian Gaborik, who I believe is playing tonight, and Kopi being injured for a little bit. So you give him a bit of a pass But I guess more so than anything, the consistency in the game of play and the pace of play for Montreal and the New York Rangers has surprised me the most.
David Pagnotta covers the NHL for the fourthperiod.com. David, appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks as always, boys. Have a good one.
Talk soon. Let's head to break. When we return, we start our quarter point of the season evaluations of the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Off the bench is Blake Wheeler. Wheeler takes it. Let's score!
Blake Wheeler scoring for the Jets. 7 goals, 8 assists for 15 points on the season so far. Going to spend the next little while looking at the Winnipeg Jets and evaluating players on the following scale. If they exceeded our expectations thus far, they get a +1. If they matched our expectations thus far, they get a 0. And if they have underperformed our expectations, they get a -1. We'll start with the forwards and work our way through the defense and the goaltending as well.
Drew, before we continue here,
yes,
we might as well call this the John Ginsburg scale.
Why?
My dad, because we started doing this last year, okay. And it was my dad who had this idea, by the way.
I don't remember that.
Instead of giving grades, you know, in years past, we would give an A and a B or a C, but my dad, being the, you know, former math professor at the University of Winnipeg, came up with this idea, and he proposed it to me, and he said, well, why don't you guys do this instead of giving out your traditional grades? So shout out to my dad.
We'll call it the Ginsburg scale. I should mention that the Ginsburg scale is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So we're going to start the Ginsburg scale with the Winnipeg Jets' dynamic rookie, number 29, Patrick Laine. After, you know, 23 games of the season, would you give Patrick Laine a +1 for exceeding your expectations, a 0 for meeting them, or a -1 for underperforming your expectations thus far?
Yeah, Dave, he gets a +1. I mean, Patrick Laine's got 12 goals here in 23 games, and I realize he's only got one goal in his last 9 games, but, you know, 11 goals in his first 14 games, 2 hat tricks. He was leading the league in goals for several weeks there. So, I mean, this guy has been unbelievable coming into the NHL at 18 years old. We knew how talented he was, but certainly he's exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, you have players like that who come in, and again, we sometimes take it for granted that because it's getting to be a younger league, that guys can just come in and make an immediate impact. But generally, they aren't 18-year-old kids. So there's no question for me, at least, that he gets a +1.
Next on our list is the Winnipeg Jets assistant captain. He signed a big money contract this past offseason. Mark Scheifele, number 55 for the Winnipeg Jets, for a while there was leading the NHL in points. He's still a point-per-game player with 23 games played and 23 points. Scheifele's getting a +1.
Yeah, he gets a +1, Drew. I mean, as you just mentioned, Mark Scheifele is not leading the league in points any longer. Connor McDavid is leading the league with 28 points right now. But as you mentioned, Mark Scheifele was number one for quite some time there. And we spent a lot of time last weekend, Drew, talking about Mark Scheifele, ranking him against some of the top centers in the NHL. So absolutely, Mark Scheifele gets a +1 here. He's been arguably a top five center in the NHL early on this season. He's been night in and night out one of the Jets' best players. Maybe last night he didn't have his best game, but certainly, you know, he's exceeded our expectations here.
Yeah, I mean, I watched him come in after last year and people said, oh, was it just garbage time? He was just picking up points when it really didn't matter anymore. And he didn't stop. And his pace has continued and he's been phenomenal and dynamic. And, you know, he's definitely got some areas to improve still, but for the most part, he's definitely exceeded the expectations.
We heard him score off the top of this segment. That's the Winnipeg Jets captain, Blake Wheeler. His numbers a little bit down from what you might have expected for Blake Wheeler in past seasons. 23 games played, 7 goals, 8 assists, 15 points for Blake Wheeler. Has he exceeded your expectations? Has he matched your expectations? Or has he underperformed thus far this season?
Yeah, Drew, Wheeler has met my expectations. I mean, night in and night out, this is one of the best players for the Winnipeg Jets. And sure, you know, his point totals might be a little bit low there, 15 points in 23 games. Maybe you'd expect him to have, you know, a couple more goals and, you know, four or five more assists. But I wouldn't get too fixated on those numbers. He's gotten big goals for this team time and time again, not only this season, but for the last 5 years. So, you know, I can't say that he's exceeded my expectations. So I'm going to say he's met my expectations. And I do think he is going to start to put up bigger offensive numbers. You know, he's been in a bit of a slump, not necessarily on this road trip, but just overall the first 23 games of the season. I don't think he's been getting the bounces that he would like.
Is it safe to say, though, as before I let Dave in here, that your expectations for Blake Wheeler were pretty high to begin with?
Absolutely. And he had a career year last year, Drew, and I thought he could even get more points than last year. But it's not just about the points, guys. It's the role that he plays on this team. I mean, this guy does everything for the team. If you need a goal, if you need a big assist, if you need him to even drop the gloves, he's shown that he can mix it up, even though he's not what you would consider to be a physical type of player, but he can be. You know, he's got lots of good size there. So I'm not at all, you know, unhappy with the way he's played thus far.
You don't have to take a negative connotation by saying someone has exceeded your expectations, because as Drew just said, you know, high expectations are high expectations. So it's when you already have them, it's pretty hard to exceed them. And you know, if you look at the numbers, especially like even the advanced stats, like Wheeler's been the best of the Jets forwards in terms of like really driving the play, you know, controlling the puck when his line is, you know, when his line is on the ice, he's been a force. So there's no question to me that Blake Wheeler has met my expectations. Has he exceeded them? No, because you're right. Technically, his points are down, so he hasn't exceeded the expectations. But again, not a negative. It's just that he's met them from what I expected him to do.
By the way, Drew, I noticed that little fist pump that you just gave because Kentucky made a good defensive play.
Well, they turned the ball over. I mean, I'm not going to bore the audience with a play-by-play recap of UK Louisville, but it was a good defensive play. They turned the ball over late
I noticed
in the game.
It.
Okay, as long as you notice, that's
I caught
fine.
A little fist pump.
Nikolai Ehlers, gentlemen. Second-year player, of course, for the Winnipeg Jets. He's off to a, you know, good point totals, 4 goals, maybe a little bit low on the goal front, but 15 assists. He's second on the team with 19 points in 23 games.
Well, Dave was tweeting about this, and I know Dave is going to agree with me here. He's tied for the league lead in assists. So Nikolai Ehlers right now gets a +1. I mean, 19 points in 23 games. It's very close to a point per game. He's been absolutely excellent. I can't remember Nikolai Ehlers having a bad game. And, you know, he took some bad penalties here on this road trip. But he's a guy that, for the most part, stays out of the penalty box. So, absolutely, Drew. Nikolai Ehlers, to me, has been one of the bright spots on this team. And, you know, guys, we've gone over 4 forwards here. And 3 of those 4 forwards have exceeded expectations. And the Jets are not having a great start to the season. So that shows you that the top offensive players for this team have not been the problem.
He just to quickly clarify, he's the second most in assists. McDavid has the most with 18. Okay. Ehlers has 15. Whatever, not a big deal. But if I could go 2, I would say 2 in this, because to be honest with you, I've been gushing over this player the entire year because I think he's been, you know, in a sophomore season, you kind of expect a player to kind of take a step back. And I really think that Ehlers has just continued to grow as a player and blossom. And, like, and you know, sure, sometimes he, like yesterday, for example, when he was in on the 2-on-1 with Mark Scheifele and he tried to get a little cute rather than taking a shot or passing it quickly, he tried to kind of wait and then kind of go behind the back spin and get it, you know, get it over to Scheifele, and he didn't. So there's still things that he could do better. But I think, like, if you're looking at his numbers, you're looking at the advanced stats, Ehlers has been great. And so he, to me, he's exceeded expectations.
Nick Petan didn't start the season with the Winnipeg Jets. He started the season with the Manitoba Moose. He, of course, has been up with the Jets since the rash of injuries went through the team.
Yep.
He's played 12 games thus far. He's got 1 goal, 6 assists, 7 points total, playing some power play time. What a grade, or would you give? What would you say about Nick Petan thus far this season?
Yeah, Nick Petan gets a +1. I'm a big fan of Nick Petan, and he started last season with the Jets and then ended up getting sent down to the Moose. But, you know, you mentioned it, Drew. 7 points in 12 games, but it's not just the points again. It's that Paul Maurice has had the confidence to put him out there, not just on the second power play unit, but on the first power play unit. So for me, Nick Petan has been great, and I think it's going to be really hard to send him down once the Jets get some bodies back.
I would go +1. I mean, I've watched him a lot with the Moose because of course he started with the Moose, and I was, you know, I mean, again, you're impressed with him, but I wasn't blown away with what he was doing in the AHL. So I thought, okay, he'll get called up to the end, and then we'll see what happens. And you know, I mean, look, it again, playing on a line with Blake Wheeler, I suspect most of us could have a lot of success. Maybe not a lot of success, but some success.
Yeah,
he's definitely exceeded my expectations with what he's been able to do. I mean, he's showing his skills, his creativity, his vision. And so, yeah, I like what Nick Batan has done so far. And again, looking at his numbers, all of them, they're all positive. You know, he's helping to control the play when he's on the ice. Generally his line is producing more shots than they're giving up. So I would give Nick Batan a one.
Dave, you're really getting into the Corsi here.
Oh, yeah, and the Fenwick.
Let's pause this. We'll come back to it. But we have Andrew Gross. He covers the New Jersey Devils for the Record newspaper. The Devils in town on Tuesday to meet the Jets. We'll talk to Andrew next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.